I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. The health care reform package is now before Congress, and it's all over the news. The health care crisis is brought to us in a very personal way by acclaimed author Lionel Shriver in her latest book, So Much for That, the story of two families dealing with terminal and chronic illnesses and the toll it takes on their lives. Lionel Shriver is a novelist whose precious books include Orange Prize winner We Need to Talk About Kevin, The Post-Birthday World, A Perfectly Good Family, Game Control, Double Fault, The Female of the Species, Checker and the Derailers, An Ordinary Decent Criminal. She is widely published as a journalist, writing features, columns, op-eds, and book reviews for The Guardian, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The Financial Times, The Economist, Marie Claire, and many other publications. She is frequently interviewed on television, radio, and in print media. Lionel, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. I really loved your book. And your book begins with Shep Nacker, who has saved for the afterlife, quote, an idyllic retirement on a tropical island in the third world where his nest egg can last forever. What happens that changed Shep's plans?
Well, right at the beginning of the book, Shep has been going on these trips with his wife looking for the perfect place to retire to for many years, and he's come to the realization that she's not serious about going. So he announces that he's about to leave for this island of Pemba off the coast of Zanzibar, with or without her. And she doesn't seem especially fussed about his announcement. She has an announcement of her own,
yes,
which is that she has cancer.
Oh,
and
okay.
That means that he can't go. If nothing else, she needs his health insurance.
Oh, definitely. And that's a big theme of the book, is the health care crisis and the health care system and the toll that it takes on families. And, you know, I love your characters and their descriptions in the book, and one thing I really liked is you write that Shep describes himself as going with the flow, while his wife Glenna is, quote, not only worked with metal or used to, she was metal, stiff, uncooperative, and inflexible. How do you think Glennis would see herself? Do you think she'd agree with that description?
I think she'd enjoy that description. Glennis is perverse.
Yes.
And Glennis is not a very good patient, as Shep remarks at some point in the book.
Yes.
Patient is not an appropriate word in her case.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And she doesn't cooperate with what we expect of seriously ill people. That is, she's not brave and philosophical and gracious. She has no interest in leaving her relationships in a state of grace. She is bitterly angry. And I think that's a rational reaction to illness.
Oh, I think so, too. That's what I liked about her. And I like that there's, you know, in the book, she says everybody wants, you know, someone says, oh, you're not, they say, you know, illness brings out the best or something. It certainly isn't happening with you. And she says, no, it's not. And this is my best, being hateful and vindictive. That is my best.
Yes, what I like about myself.
Yeah, what I like about, yes. Yeah. And there was something that Shep said that I thought was so true. When Shep and Carol are talking about Glennis, and Carol asks how Shep is doing, and he says, quote, he seemed to find the question irrelevant. Obviously, I'm scared, he said, but I can't afford to be scared or to be anything else either. I'm the one who has to keep it together, so it doesn't matter how I am. I don't matter anymore. It was the first thing he said all day with a real passion. And I think that's a common feeling for, you know, the partner or someone who's taking care of someone with a terminal illness, is why should I have any feelings, you know, look at what they're going through. But you need to acknowledge how you're feeling.
Well, that is one of the biggest themes in the book, actually,
mm-hmm.
Because this is a novel which is told not from the perspective of the person who's sick, which I think is a little harder to take
mm-hmm.
as a reader, but it's told from the perspective of the carer, in this case the spouse.
Yes.
And that's a particular role with its special demands, and one of the problems with being the person who takes care of the person who's sick is that you don't feel you have any rights.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the right to have any needs. Everything is subsidiary to the needs of the person who's very sick. One of the things I came to realize in the writing of the book is that illness confers an awesome power.
Yes. Yes, it does. You know, it's funny because when my mother was dying, my brother had moved in to take care of her, which was amazing. And I would make a long story short, I was working late one night, and I was living in Hawaii, so I would ride my bike, you know, it was nice. But it was midnight, I was tired, and I called up and I said, Mom, you know, is Mark there? I'd like him to come pick me up. And she said, he's not here for you, he's here for me. And I said, it's like a 5-minute drive, you know, and she was so upset. And she was like, no, there's no way. I need him here every single second. And it's like, no, you'll be okay for 5 minutes. But she felt like she could not, and she had to control everything. So.
Well, that's the thing, is when you are very ill,
yes,
for your family,
mm-hmm,
you are the center of attention. Anything you need is more important than what anyone else needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, everyone who gets sick is not going to play to this role.
Yes.
there are people who get sick, and it does bring out a grace and gentleness and warmth and all that. But then there's everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. And the other story that I like in there obviously has to do with Carol and Jackson, and they're married and they have two children, and Flicka and Heather. And Flicka has something called FD. If you can tell us a little bit about that, and also, you know, how that affects them, because again, hers is a chronic debilitating illness versus
yes.
a
Well,
terminal.
One of the ways that I try to keep this book from being too unremitting, too
mm-hmm.
grim, too
yes.
much about, oh God, cancer,
yes.
is that I mixed it up with three other subplots, but they all have a medical nature. And
mm-hmm.
one of them is a 16-year-old kid whose name is Flicka, and she has what's called familial dysautonomia. Now, that's a mouthful.
Yes, that's what I said. I'm like, I'll just call it FD.
Mercifully abbreviated FD. And it's an exclusively Ashkenazi Jewish
mm-hmm.
genetic disease.
Okay.
Very rare. Apparently only about 350 people in the world have it.
Oh, my God. I'm Jewish and Ashkenazi. I've never heard of it until I read your book.
Well, that's
yeah, it's
because
so
it's
rare.
Very rare.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's terrible. Mm. It means that your autonomic system is on the fritz, and before I researched this disease, I never even heard of the autonomic system,
mm-hmm.
which is apparently what controls everything in your body that you don't generally have to think about.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Your blood pressure, your breathing, your swallowing. People who have FD have to learn to eat.
Oh,
they have to
gosh.
Learn to swallow. And this is a very demanding condition. So the younger sister ends up taking a drug she doesn't need, which, unbeknownst to her, is really sugar pills.
Oh.
But she needs medical attention, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really takes a toll on the family
mm-hmm.
and siblings. Throughout the book, you bring up some really important issues about health care, and through the characters' conversations, 40-something percent of this country is either on Medicaid or Medicare. 30% of the money spent on medical care in this country goes to so-called administration. And there was a particular thing that Jackson said that I thought was really powerful. He said, quote, guys with health benefits don't think they're paying their own medical bills. They cling to their precious employer health insurance as if it's a great freebie. It's not free. They don't understand. They'd be getting like 15 grand more in salary if it weren't for the damned health benefit. So I think that's great that the way these things are naturally brought to light within the context of these characters, you know, living their lives and going through these experiences.
Yeah, there are a lot of little statistics woven through the
mm-hmm.
text. I try to make them arise naturally because, of course, you know.
Oh, they totally do.
You and I have these discussions.
Mm-hmm.
We do talk about these things, especially lately.
Oh, of course, yes.
So I don't think it's unnatural
mm-hmm.
for them to pop up in conversation.
Oh, not at all.
But I certainly didn't want the novel to degenerate into a polemic.
Yeah.
And this novel does have some political motivations, and I'm not shy about that.
That's good.
But if that's all it were, then it wouldn't last very long.
No.
So I was trying to look at larger issues that aren't going to go away with any healthcare legislation, like what is the effect of major illness on a marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Does it make you feel closer to each other, or is it alienating? And interestingly, I found that it's a little bit of both.
Yes.
Now, what is our relationship to death? And I mean, I had a good friend of mine die of mesothelioma, which is what Glynis has in the book. And one of the things I noticed is people making themselves scarce in her lives. Little by little, people disappeared on her.
That's terrible.
And my sense is that this is very commonplace, that we are not comfortable these days with death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to give in to a tendency to avoid people who are very sick.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, there's a lot of fear there.
Yeah.
And we're not open enough, and people need to talk more about these things. Because that's really sad.
It is very sad.
You know?
But it's just, I noticed even I started having difficulty getting myself to ring up my friend and, you know, have regular conversations. I'd always think, well, I should ring Terry, but maybe I'll do it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is death, you know.
And
I just think that we're not very good at death these days.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's something that definitely needs to be out in the awareness. And that's why, you know, again, I like your book, because you're touching on these different issues. And you also, you know, talk about assisted living. That comes up naturally within the course of the book, about how Shep's sister wants to put their father in assisted living, but she doesn't seem to understand the costs, and seems to be like, well, what's the problem? Just put them in. You know, not getting that it doesn't just, it's not free.
One of the things that people often don't understand until they have to face the music themselves when they're old is that the government does not pick up the tab
mm-hmm.
for a nursing home or an assisted living facility, not unless you're completely broke. That is not covered by Medicare.
Wow.
That's covered by Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
But only if you have no assets.
I see.
So that if you get old and you need to go into care, you're going to have to sell your house and liquidate all your assets before the government picks up the bill for these nursing homes.
Yeah. What would you like to see with what's going on right now with the, you know, the healthcare system? What I guess in an ideal world, what would you think would be best?
Well, personally, I'm an advocate of the single-payer system.
Okay.
I've lived in Britain for 23 years, and that means that I've been living with the National Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHS is used over here as a boogeyman. You know, oh, that would be terrible if we had that. I think it would be great if we had that. The Glynis, my character who has mesothelioma,
mm-hmm.
her treatments in the end cost $2 million.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, this is, by the way, this is realistic.
Yeah.
That's what my friend's treatment for mesothelioma cost. $2 million.
Unbelievable.
And all of those treatments probably get Glynis about 3 extra months. But they were not very nice months.
No. You know, there's, I want to go back to some of the passages I love. There's another passage that I think a lot of, talking about caregivers and you know, partners feel, and talks about Shep, you know, Glynis is in the hospital, Shep is at home, and he says, to his surprise, Shep slept deeply. To his shame, being in bed on his own was a relief. The simplicity of it, the undemanding expanse of empty sheet, he hadn't realized the strain of another body beside him, rotting a little more every minute from the inside out. The energy it sapped from him, not being able to protect her, you wouldn't think that something you could do and are not doing would take any energy at all, but it did. And I thought, I love, I said, again, that honesty of that whole, why do I matter? And then feeling shame that he actually, it's nice to be alone without, you know, when I visit my mother and I left, I feel guilty because it was kind of peaceful and quiet, and I wish she wasn't yelling at me about something. And I miss her terribly, but the cancer brought out not the best side, like we were talking about, and it was, you know, hard to deal with, but we all had to be nice, and because you don't want to upset the sick person, you know.
Yeah, and it's a relief to get away.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And
so
if you love them.
Yes, of course, but it is. It can be so, so difficult. And another thing I loved about the book is that Jackson, he talked about mooches, criminals, and mugs. He can define those for us briefly. What was that?
My Jackson's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, I like Jackson a lot.
And Jackson divides the world into mugs and mooches.
Okay.
And he says that society is roughly cleaved between the takers and the taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, he believes that half of the country is living off the other half.
Okay.
And anyone who works for government is a mooch.
Mm-hmm.
But this category is quite expansive. It includes lawyers, it includes accountants, it includes bankers, and the mugs are us normal people.
Oh, I
see.
Those
who are paying our taxes and getting very little in return for them,
mm-hmm.
and working very hard and getting very little in return for that.
Would you say, is he a bit of a libertarian? Is that?
I'd call him a libertarian. The book never labels him with
mm-hmm.
that, and he never labels himself.
Yeah.
Since that's a simplistic term anyway.
Yeah, especially, yeah.
But, you know, other people misunderstand him as right wing.
Yeah. No, I thought of him as more as a libertarian. I love politics, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, oh, my gosh, I could talk to you all day, but we're actually out of time. Is there anything, actually, that you wanted to add before we conclude?
Well, I think this is a novel that whose subject matter is implicitly a turnoff. I have a perverse streak a mile wide.
Well, that's why I like you.
I naturally write about anything that other people don't want to read about.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I think this is, it's pretty candy-coated.
Mm-hmm.
It's never aimed to bore you. And I'm certainly not merely aiming to edify you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to entertain you.
Yeah, no, it's very entertaining and very eye-opening. It was wonderful. And, Lionel, how can people learn more about you and your wonderful work?
Read my other books.
Great. Do you have a website as well?
I don't have a website, per se.
Okay.
So if you put my name into Google, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of hits.
Okay.
You'll keep yourself occupied.
Oh, yeah, and it's Lionel Shriver. And today we've been talking about So Much For That. And I want to thank you so much. And if people want to contact me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week.